Okay, well,
it's a great pleasure to be here, and I'd like to thank the organizers. I also would like to thank all of you, being the very last talk of the day. I assume that you're all either highly caffeinated or about to lapse into unconsciousness, and I will not pass judgment on you, whichever of these is the case. But I'll try to make this snappy. This seemed like a topic that fit in well for a conference that's about both quantum information and quantum control, and you can see if you agree with that assessment after I'm done, assuming that this thing will ever move. Yeah, okay. All right, so what this talk is about is the possibility of decomposing any quantum measurement into a sequence of weak measurements, or in the limit, into a continuous measurement process. Now, this is actually something that people really do, but I'm going to treat this rather abstractly, imagining all possible generalized measurements. But I'll start with projective measurements, which we all know and hopefully love. And in a projective measurement, all of the information that you really care about, as far as determining the probabilities of outcomes and what the states are after the measurement, are determined by some set of orthogonal projectors. And these projectors, they're orthogonal to each other and they add up to the identity. After you do a measurement, your state is projected into some subspace, renormalized, and the probabilities are just the expectation values of the projection operators. And the way this was, of course, historically formulated was in terms of observables, Hermitian operators, where the projectors are just the projectors corresponding to the spectral decomposition. And for our purposes, any function of this observable is basically the same measurement. So we don't really care what the eigenvalues are. But in quantum information, we tend to use generalized measurements as our formulation. It's broader, it allows us to include more things. And in this case, it looks pretty much the same, except instead of projectors, we have these more general measurement operators, MJ. And MJ dagger MJ has to add up to the identity, but these don't have to be orthogonal or anything like that. And the way the state transforms is very similar to the projective case, and the probabilities are calculated in a very similar way. Now, the thing about generalized measurements is that the term generalized measurement is a bit of a misnomer, because it's actually an extremely broad class of operations that includes all kinds of things that are by no conceivable stretch of the imagination actually measurements. So it does include the projective measurements as a special case, but it also, for example, includes unitary transformations. I mean, if you look at this condition, if there's only one member of this set, this is the definition of a unitary operator. So unitaries are generalized measurements by this definition. It also includes things like this, where every operator is proportional to the identity. Now, this does nothing to the state whatsoever. The state is totally unchanged, but it does generate one bit of randomness. So by this definition, this is a generalized measurement. But what we do see is that for generalized measurements, just like projective measurements, you always have this information disturbance trade-off. So if a measurement does give you information about the state, it must disturb the state. So in the case of a projective measurement, the only time a measurement has an outcome with probability 1 is if your state is already an eigenstate of the measurement operator, in which case you already know what the state is going to be after you do the measurement, and you have not actually gained any information. You haven't disturbed this state. Anything that actually doesn't have a 100% predictable outcome will disturb the state in general afterwards. All right. Now, amongst the extremely broad class of generalized measurements, there are measurements that I'm going to call weak. Now, you can define weak measurements in different ways. So if you've read literature about weak measurements, you may have seen definitions which are not exactly the same as this. But for my purpose, a weak measurement is the answer to the question of what can we do if we push this information disturbance trade-off to the point where we disturb the state as little as possible, but then necessarily get very little information from the measurement. So a weak measurement is a measurement where every outcome leaves the state almost unchanged, but necessarily gives us very little information about the system that we're measuring. Now, there are other definitions where you can have rare events that change the state a great deal, for example. I'm not going to consider those here. Okay. So what is it that makes a measurement weak? Well, if we consider my example of a what you might call a silly measurement, a measurement that doesn't measure anything, the measurement operators were proportional to the identity. Well, a weak measurement hardly changes the state. So all of its measurement operators are going to be very close to being the identity. So I could write it like this. It's the identity plus some operator which is small in some suitable sense. And these QJs have to add up to 1 and be positive. So these epsilons are what change the state. The identity obviously will leave the state unchanged. So if I wanted to, I could rewrite this in a different way where I expanded this square root using the binomial expansion, and I got something proportional to the identity plus something small. Okay. So that's what I mean by a weak measurement. By the way, if anyone thinks that I'm saying something unjustified or doesn't understand something I'm saying, please do ask questions. All right. Now, it turns out that any projective measurement can be decomposed into a sequence of weak measurements. So what do I mean by that? What I mean is each individual weak measurement gives you very little information. But if you do the same weak measurement over and over again, you can gradually accumulate enough information that after some amount of time, you will conclude that you've either had one outcome, which I'll call 0, or another outcome, which I'll call 1. So how does that work? Well, in this talk, the only measurements I'm going to consider are measurements with 2 outcomes, but it turns out that's actually completely general. You can break down any measurement process into a sequence of 2 outcome measurements. So in our case of a projective measurement, that means we have 2 projectors, P0 and P1, that add up to the identity and which are orthogonal to each other. And I can now construct a weak measurement whose measurement operators are M plus and minus. Now, this tanh here is just an artifact of my parameterization. But the thing to note is this epsilon is a small positive real number. So this quantity here with the plus would be a number just slightly larger than 1/2, whereas this will be a number just slightly smaller than 1/2. So if I do a measurement and I get outcome plus, what that means is that the component of the state, which is preserved by P0, will become slightly larger relative to the component projected onto by P1. And you can see this is a weak measurement by just expanding this square root and this tanh, and you'll see that these are the identity plus and minus some small operator. So this epsilon is just a number. And this operator is a Hermitian operator with eigenvalues plus and minus 1. Okay. So what happens if I do this measurement repeatedly? An easy way to see that is to write the state in the following form. So I write the state in terms of its 2 orthogonal components, psi 0 and psi 1, which are the components projected out by P0 and P1. Okay. So my initial state, which I don't necessarily even know, but it doesn't matter, has some P0, which is the weight of the psi 0 component, and P1, which is the weight of the psi 1 component. Now I do one of these weak measurements. If I get the plus result, what will happen is that the ratio of P0 to P1 will be changed by a constant. If I get the opposite result, the ratio will be divided by the same constant. An easy way to parameterize this is using this parameter x, and that's why these tanches start showing up everywhere. This x is the natural log of the square root of the ratio of P0 to P1. So why choose this? Well, as x goes off to plus infinity, that's the same as saying that P0 is going to 1 and P1 is going to 0. If P0 goes to 0 and P1 goes to 1, by contrast, x will go off to minus infinity. So After each such measurement, depending on whether you got the result plus or minus, the value of this parameter is going to increase or decrease by an amount epsilon. And if you do this repeatedly, what you have in effect is a random walk on the real line. And it will walk by small steps plus and minus epsilon. And if x approaches either a very large number or a very small number, the state psi will approach either psi 0 or psi 1. Okay. And while I haven't shown this here, you can make an argument that the probability of it eventually ending up at psi 0 is exactly p0, and the probability of it eventually ending up at psi 1 is exactly p1. So this really does exactly perform the projective measurement in the limit where I let x go all the way to plus or minus infinity. Now, in practice, we don't usually have that long. So rather than waiting till infinity, you will have some large threshold for x, and you'll wait until x becomes, till the absolute value of x becomes larger than that, and then you'll stop, and then you'll be close to this state. Okay. Now, can we do that with a generalized measurement? Now, while I haven't seen this particular decomposition of projective measurements exactly in this form, it's been well known, in essence, that you can do this for a long time. For example, quantum trajectory equations have a localizing effect, where at long times the state tends to settle down onto eigenstates of some operator if you set the equations up in a particular way. And you can show that those quantum trajectory equations can be described as exactly repeating this measurement over and over again in a limit where you let the epsilon go to zero. What about generalized measurements? Well, there it's a little different. Here, psi 0 and psi 1 are orthogonal to each other, so in some sense, there's a natural place to stop. But with generalized measurements, the states you can get don't necessarily have to have that property. So it's not obvious that you can do this for generalized measurements, but as we discovered, my student Ognya Nareshkov and I, it is indeed possible to do this, but unlike the projective measurement case, you're not doing exactly the same measurement over and over and over again. Instead, while you're doing a weak measurement at every step, it's a different weak measurement that depends on the results that you got before. But fortunately, it depends on these results in a rather simple way that's fairly easy to keep track of. So let's see how that works. But the key point here is to decompose a generalized measurement into a continuous or a sequence of weak measurements, you need feedback. You need to keep track of the results you've gotten so far and use that to determine what you do next. Okay. So let's define an operator m of x. So this x should look very familiar. It's pretty much the same x as before, or it has an analogous role. M of x is this operator. So m1 and m2 are the measurement operators for the generalized measurement I'm trying to decompose into weak measurements. I can then define this m, which is parameterized by x. So when I set x to be 0, then this term is 0, and it's just the identity. If, however, I let x go off to plus infinity, the tanh goes to plus 1. M1 squared plus M2 squared are the identity. So you find that as x goes to plus infinity, this goes to M2. Similarly, if I let x go to minus infinity, this goes to M1. All right. So if I took my state psi and multiplied it by this operator, as I let x start at 0, I'll start in my original state psi, and then if I let the parameter x go to plus or minus infinity, my state will change to become either m1 times psi or m2 times psi, which are the outcomes of the generalized measurements. So that's looking pretty good so far. But I can't just multiply by any old operator I like. This is not a unitary or anything like that. So how do I do it? Well, I define a weak measurement process. Same as before, it's m plus or minus, but now what the weak measurement is depends on x. And the x shows up in here and in here. So it may not be totally obvious, but this is indeed a weak measurement. What you're basically doing is you're taking one operator at a value of x plus or minus epsilon, and then you're multiplying by the inverse at a very nearby value of the parameter. And you can show with a little work that this is indeed close to the identity. And if you this c plus or minus is just a parameter you have to put in so that m plus squared plus m minus squared adds up to the identity. Okay, say I do a measurement and I get result plus. Then my state is multiplied by m plus of x. If I got minus, my state would be multiplied by m minus of x. Well, it turns out you can look at this m of x and multiply it by m plus or minus of x and discover that it has the curious property that if you multiply m of x by m plus of x, you get something proportional to m of x plus epsilon. If you multiply by m minus of x, you get m minus of epsilon. And remember, m of 0 is the identity. So as I do this measurement, starting at x equals 0, I get either plus or minus. Suddenly my state is now the state psi multiplied by m of plus or minus epsilon. I do it again. I multiply by either plus or minus, and I go to either 2 epsilon or back to 0, and so forth. So at each point, I have to keep track of the value of this x. So this x is basically just the number of pluses that I've gotten minus the number of minus results that I've gotten. Okay. And at each point in this process, the state is proportional to m of x times psi. So I'm doing a random walk along a curve in state space as I do these measurements over and over again. And once again, if I keep going as x goes to either plus or minus infinity, my state will approach either m2 times psi or m1 times psi. So I am, and again, I haven't shown this here, but you can show that the probabilities of going to plus infinity and minus infinity are exactly the probabilities of the original generalized measurement. So you can decompose any generalized measurement into a sequence of weak measurements in this way. Okay. So any questions about this procedure? Okay. So I don't know. This is leaning me towards the uncaffeinated side, but but that's okay. You know, it's the end of the day. So, yeah, so. Glad you asked that question. So we originally did this for theoretical reasons, and I'll just go very quickly through this. Basically, what I was interested in originally was the question of finding entanglement monotones. Now, entanglement monotones are just functions of the state which have the property that if you do local operations on the state, on average, the value of the function must go down. So you can write that as two conditions. One is that if you do a local unitary, the value should be unchanged because you can always undo it. And if you do a local measurement, then the average of the value in the state given one outcome and the state in the other outcome must be less than the value in the original state. Okay, so that's what an entanglement monotone is. And this has to be true for any local operation if it's a monotone, which means it obviously has to be true for weak local operations. But we've just shown that you can do any local operation as a sequence of weak operations, which means that to be a monotone under weak operations is both a necessary and a sufficient condition for an entanglement monotone. So taking the limit where they become very weak, I can find differential conditions for a function to be an entanglement monotone. And here they are. They're quite beautiful. Well, maybe. This is basically the condition to be invariant under local unitaries, where epsilon is an arbitrary local Hermitian operator. So basically you're expanding e to the minus I epsilon. And you get this condition. This is an inequality because it's the measurement condition, and it's not entirely beautiful, I have to admit. But you can sort of think of this analogously to looking at a minimum in ordinary calculus, where at a minimum the first derivative vanishes and the second derivative is is negative. So one can sort of think of it that way. A monotone is sitting at the top of a hill wherever it is, and it always wants to roll downhill. So that's a theoretical use. If you want to apply this to mixed states, you probably need to add a third condition, which is that your function be convex. But there's actually a differential formulation of this as well. Another thing, which I won't really say anything about, is you can also decompose the error correction procedures into a continuous process. Now, this idea is not new. Various people have worked on this. Paz and Zurich first proposed this back in 1996, and there was also work by Ahn and Landahl on this subject. But exactly how to do the decomposition becomes, I think, a little bit clearer when you have this kind of decomposition of measurements available to you. Okay, so this is such a beautiful theoretical idea that I kind of hate to bring it in contact with reality. But I could ask, could you actually do this in practice for anything? So there are some measurements that you can fit into this formulation, like heterodyne measurements, for example. In a heterodyne measurement, you're mixing the output of a cavity with a strong local oscillator. During any short time dt, the information that you get out is mostly noise. It conveys very little information about the system. But as you accumulate more and more, you learn more and more. But what are some other systems? Well, one that seems promising is the superconducting cavity probed by Rydberg atoms, studied by Hirosh and Raymond for quite a long time. And the key is it has to be a system where you can apply feedback, where you can change what the measurement you're doing is as you go along based on your output. And there are several things you can change in their system. They send atoms through here, they interact in the cavity, and then you measure them. And so there are several things you could adjust. You could change the state you prepare the atoms in on this side. You could, in principle, change their velocities so they spend a longer or shorter time in the cavity. And then you could change what you measure at the other side. And based on the sequence of detections, you could be continuously adjusting all three of these. So that presumably makes possible some class of generalized measurements by doing them as a sequence of weak measurements in this way. But in fact, it's an open problem, which I'm calling the inverse problem because it sounds more dignified, which is instead of asking, given a measurement, how can I decompose it into weak measurements? I could ask, given an experimental system that allows me to do some class of weak measurements, what generalized measurements can I do? And unfortunately, I don't know the answer, but if any of you do, I'd be very interested to hear it. So that's all that I have time for, I'm afraid, so thank you for your attention. And I should say, if you want to read anything about that, there are several there are a couple of papers by us on the web, and this is just about that system.